Welcome to each of you to chapel gathering this morning. A statement that Chris Ann Swartley sent in her introduction to what she wanted to speak about is making space for Ruth actually made space for God to work. So we're going to trust that God is at work among us as we listen to the narrative of Ruth and what Chris Ann brings to us. Chris Ann, by way of introduction, received her undergraduate degree from here, Eastern Mennonite University, in Congregational and Youth Ministry, and served as a youth pastor at Souderton Mennonite Church from 1998 to 2002. She received her Master of Divinity from Biblical Seminary in Hatfield, Pennsylvania, in 2009, and served as pastor of worship and mission, hear the word mission in here again, it's in here a couple times, at a small Anabaptist Restart in Levittown, Pennsylvania, near Philadelphia, I believe, and is now the pastor for Missional Journey. I love this title, Pastor for the Missional Journey at Doylestown Mennonite. She is married to John, and mom to Heidi, who is 10, and Benjamin, who is 8, and she says, "We garden, plant trees, four-wheel, and play with our dog on our 10-acre wooded property in Hilltown, Pennsylvania." Does the dog have a name?
Reese.
Okay, that's important stuff. Now, I have a good word, and I have a quote here that I also want to read as part of an introduction. Chris Ann is a woman full of faith and compassionate grace. She is authentic, authentically human, and authentically Christian. She loves God, but she also loves people in a way that doesn't embarrass God. She speaks truth and hope to women and men on the margins in a way that doesn't shame them, but shares the Jesus story, a story full of love and hope. And this particular individual, i.e. Trina, says, "I am proud to call Chris Ann my friend and sister in Christ." So we're looking forward to what you have to offer to us this morning.
I'm reading selected passages from Ruth, and I'm reading from The Message. Once upon a time, it was back in the days when judges led Israel, there was a famine in the land. A man from Bethlehem in Judah left home to live in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The man's name was Elimelech. His wife's name was Naomi. His sons were named Mahlon and Chilion, all Ephrathites from Bethlehem in Judah. They all went to the country of Moab and settled there. But Elimelech died, and Naomi was left, she and her two sons. The sons took Moabite wives. The name of the first was Orpah, the second, Ruth. They lived there in Moab for the next 10 years, but then the two brothers, Mahlon and Chilion, died. Now the woman was left without either her young men or her husband. When Naomi saw that Ruth had her heart set on going with her, she gave in. And so the two of them traveled on together to Bethlehem. When they arrived in Bethlehem, the whole town was soon buzzing. "Is this really our Naomi? And after all this time?" But she said, "Don't call me Naomi. Call me bitter. The strong one has dealt me a bitter blow. I left here full of life, and God has brought me back with nothing but the clothes on my back. Why would you call me Naomi? God certainly doesn't. The strong one has ruined me." And so Naomi was back, and Ruth the foreigner with her, back from the country of Moab. They arrived in Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. Then Boaz spoke to Ruth, "Listen, my daughter. From now on, don't go to any other field to glean. Stay right here in this one. And stay close to my young women. Watch where they are harvesting and follow them. And don't worry about a thing. I've given orders to my servants not to harass you. When you get thirsty, feel free to go and drink from the water buckets that the servants have filled." She dropped to her knees, then bowed her face to the ground. "How does this happen, that you should pick me out and treat me so kindly? Me, a foreigner. Boaz answered her, I've heard all about you. Heard about the way you treated your mother-in-law after the death of her husband, how you left your father and mother and the land of your birth and have come to live among a bunch of total strangers. God reward you well for what you've done, and with a generous bonus besides from God, to whom you've come seeking protection under his wings. She said, Oh, sir, such grace, such kindness, I don't deserve it. You've touched my heart, you've treated me like one of your own, and I don't even belong here. At the lunch break, Boaz said to her, Come over here, eat some bread, and dip it in the wine. So she joined the harvesters. Boaz passed the roasted grain to her, and she ate her fill, and even had some left over. When she got up to go back to work, Boaz ordered his servants, Let her glean where there's still plenty of grain on the ground. Make it easy for her. Better yet, pull some of the good stuff out and leave it for her to glean. Give her special treatment. Boaz married Ruth. She became his wife, and Boaz slept with her. By God's gracious gift, she conceived and had a son. The town women said to Naomi, Blessed be God. He didn't leave you without family to carry on your life. May this baby grow up to be famous in Israel. He'll make you young again. He'll take care of you in your old age. And this daughter-in-law who has brought him into the world and loves you so much, why, she's worth more to you than seven sons. Naomi took the baby and held him in her arms, cuddling him, cooing over him, waiting on him hand and foot. The neighborhood women started calling him Naomi's baby boy. But his real name was Obed. And Obed was the father of Jesse, and Jesse was the father of David.
I'm struggling with the thought that I think you said too much, but I will just accept it graciously. It is good to be with you today. It was actually always my dream to attend EMS, following in my dad's footsteps. And that was not the case for me. I ended up going to biblical seminary, which comes out of the Reformed tradition, but is taking a missional turn, which it was very exciting to be there, but it's good to be here today. It feels like a different fulfillment of my dream of coming to EMS to be with you and to be able to speak about one of my favorite books of the Bible. I want to play with the theme this morning of insiders and outsiders, because I think God does something pretty incredible as we think about the theme of being inside and outside the definition of God's people. And I think miracles happen when we expand our understanding of who is in and who is out. For most of my life, as a Mennonite pastor's kid with a good Mennonite pedigree, I spent most of my life as an insider and did not even wake up to this theme of what creating boxes of insiders and outsiders does to the gospel. I didn't even think about that until I was put in positions where I was the outsider, and all of a sudden, I was the one who didn't understand the inside jokes. I was the one who couldn't play the Mennonite game, or the other version of the Mennonite game. I was the one who didn't understand the language that was being spoken. And then I wondered, how do the insiders feel when they're with us? How do the outsiders feel when they're with us, the insiders? When I'm among my people and there are guests, how do they feel when they don't understand the language we're speaking? How do they feel when we are telling the inside jokes and we're laughing and they're wondering what's up? So I want to take a look. Oh, also, another thing I want to mention about the theme of insiders and outsiders is there were few times when I actually understood the access I had as an insider. I could drop my dad's name, and immediately people would say, oh, you're Dennis Kunz's daughter. Oh, we know who you are. Or, oh, you're Harold Kunz's granddaughter. We know who you are. It gave me access to people access to conversations that outsiders don't have. So what happens when we practice taking down those barriers and lift up the outsiders? So I want to take a look at Naomi and at Boaz. I'm actually going to ignore Ruth, at least for a little bit, even though the book bears her name, because I want to take a look at how Naomi and Boaz, both in their very, very different ways, made space for Ruth the outsider. And not only the outsider, but let's remember, an enemy of God. According to Deuteronomy 23, I believe it's 23, I made notes about this. Yes, Deuteronomy 23, Moabites were not to be permitted into the people of God down to the 10th generation, period. This book breaks the rules, breaks God's rules. So Naomi and Elimelech, there's a famine, and so they flee to Moab. And I wonder, you know, the first seven verses of the book carry so much in them, and there are so many details that are left out, that I keep wondering to myself, what did it feel like for them to leave their land and go to Moab? I wonder if they spit every time they had to say the name. I wonder about this, what the author of this book is doing with these themes of who's in and who's out. Because they left the promised land because there was no food. And let's not gloss over the word famine too quickly. Famine ain't pretty. Famine is serious. And they were fleeing to a land where they could survive. It was survival. It was survival. You have to go where there's food to eat. So here they are in enemy territory, and their two sons, and then Elimelech dies. So now Naomi is not only in a foreign land, a scary place, the place of the enemy, but she's without her husband. Thank God she still has sons. But then her sons take Moabite wives. I wonder what she was thinking. I wonder if she sat her sons down and said, these aren't good Mennonite girls. I'm sorry, Israelite girls. But they did it anyway. And for 10 years, Naomi was with her sons and their wives, practicing her faith, being an Israelite, in enemy being an outsider. And then her sons die. And I don't, this book touches nerves with me. Whatever she was doing, we don't know what she was doing for those 10 years that she spent with those ladies. But whatever she was doing, practicing her faith, it touched something in Ruth and Orpah. To the point where Ruth is making crazy vows. This enemy of God, your people are now going to be, I choose to become an outsider in your insider place. I choose your people and your land and your God. Crazy vows. What was Naomi doing? It doesn't say. And even in her grief, Naomi pushes our edges of what is okay for evangelism. Because she is raw and she's honest. God has dealt me a bitter blow. I went away full and he's bringing me back empty. Her faith is not, oh, Ruth, let me tell you about this good God. Let me tell you how if you believe, things will go well with you. Let me tell you, you know, this neat, tidy faith that I have. No. Naomi's not like that in her evangelism. The God that she talks to Ruth about is a God that has dealt her a bitter blow. And she just lays it out there, and Ruth chooses this God anyway. I'm going to tell a story on my dad, who's here today. Dad taught me about this when we lost Mom about 10 years ago. Mom died of cancer, and I witnessed my dad
grieving right in front of me, even as I'm grieving myself. And it was evangelism to me in a time when I told God, I'm pretty much done with you now. But Dad would just gently and truthfully speak of his own journey, his own grief, his own faith in a very honest way. And that kind of evangelism does more than any tract, any list of the neat doctrine that we invite people to believe. This is my journey with God, the good, bad, and ugly. And it touches Ruth, and miracles happen. Miracles. And Boaz, very, very different. So Ruth makes these crazy vows, this enemy of God, somehow touched by God's great and wide grace, makes these crazy vows and follows Naomi. And Boaz shows up in the field. Ruth, pretty amazing. She actually takes the initiative quite a bit in this relationship with Naomi and says, "We need food. I need to go glean. Will you let me go glean?" And she does, and Boaz shows up. Now, pretty much the opposite of Naomi in many ways. Boaz is the ultimate insider. He's got position, power, wealth, privilege, honor. And what does he do for Ruth? First, he praises her character and faith. And they told him she was a Moabite. He praises her character and her faith. Never gives her instructions on how to do things properly, but just makes space for her and protects her. He provides for her. He allows her even to, this is the most beautiful part, I think, and it's just kind of tucked in the scriptures. He actually provides space for her to make mistakes. He says to his people, don't you dare rebuke her, even if she goes where she's not quite supposed to go and is picking stuff she's not supposed to pick. Don't you dare. Don't you dare rebuke her. You let her be. Let her make mistakes. Boaz, again, pushes against. We like to control things, right? Like we as insiders, it's okay, come and be a part of us, but first let me explain what that means because you need to follow the rules. Mm-mm. No, not for Boaz. He pushes against our need to control and says, wow, your faith is amazing. And here, take this. And here, have some lunch and water. Oh, and take a whole bunch of stuff home for Naomi. And go ahead and make mistakes. It's okay. Just be a part. Be here. And you guys over there, don't you dare. Don't you touch her. Don't you rebuke her. You leave her be. And his release of control, he demonstrates for us this deep trust that when God is at work in people, even surprising and shocking people, when God is at work, you can trust God to shape and grow them. We don't have to try to do it ourselves. We make space and we trust God to work. The message of Ruth, I think, for the Israelites was be careful what you assume. Be careful that you don't assume that God is only at work in the insiders. God is at work all over the place. And you may find yourself actually an outsider. And when you do, you can trust God to still be at work. And the way Naomi and Boaz both created space for this amazing, deep and wide and great grace of God made space for a great king and then an even greater king and a kingdom without borders. How amazing is that? For just a moment, I want to talk about Jesus. I have actually a least favorite story of Jesus, but I've recently discovered that it gives me hope as I grow into the idea that I don't want there to be insiders and outsiders. I just want there to be people and to trust that God is at work all over the place. So Jesus and the faith of the Canaanite woman, right? Matthew 15. This used to irritate the heck out of me. Am I allowed to say that in seminary? He's so rude to her. Insiders and outsiders. Jesus in his humanness, as well as in his divineness. Divineness, did I just make up a word? Even he grew in his understanding of where God is at work. This woman comes and asks for something, and he says, no. And she presses him, much like Ruth. And he says, ah, you have great faith. Your request is granted. And her daughter was healed. Let's be patient with ourselves as we grow in our understanding of where God is at work. Even as Jesus woke up to the fact that this Canaanite had faith, may we wake up to places where people are finding faith in God. And use Naomi and Boaz as two examples of unique evangelism. I want to tell you a little bit in closing about a way that I'm playing with this theme even in my own life. So I'm pastor for the missional journey, and I decided at one point that I needed to be intentional about practicing what I was preaching. If I'm going to ask people to act like sent people in their own neighborhoods, I need to be sent into my neighborhood and learn what it means to talk about faith and Jesus and God and find out where God's at work beyond borders, beyond insiders and outsiders. So there is actually a strip club down the hill from my house. So every Friday, I go and I just hang out. I have a soda or a beer or whatever, and I just talk to people there. And I've gotten to know the owners, and I've gotten to know the head bartender pretty well. The same bartender is there usually when I go. And I've actually discovered that the bartender has a pastor's heart. I've talked to her about what she does, and she asks, you church ladies, why do you come here? And I say, well, as a church lady, so how do you summarize in 30 seconds or less? Well, I'm pastor for the missional journey, and so I'm trying to be missional, and let me explain what that means. So I just decided to tell her, so church ladies, we try to love God and love our neighbors, and so this is me trying to love my neighbor. You're my neighbors, and so I'm trying to love you. So you can tell me what that means. How can I love you better? And so it's been like 2 years now, and going there regularly has been, you think about the 10 years that Naomi spent with her daughters-in-law, and then Ruth made these crazy vows. So I'm trying to take the long view of things. So it's been 2 years, and we finally gotten to the point, Beth and I, where she's begun to tell me a little bit of her life story and how she hates alcohol, and she hates stripping, but she somehow needed to provide for her children. What she does love about her job, and this is where I see sort of a pastor's heart in her, she loves to hear people's stories and to care for the people who come. Wow. She's asked me about prayer. If God's going to do what God's going to do, why do we pray, really? I've learned to say a lot. I don't know. I know a couple of things. Here's what I think I know. But I hear your question. Fast forward, as I've gotten to know Beth, I've also gotten to know the owners there. And the owner, Joel, is an interesting guy. He actually ended up, he's an alcoholic, he ended up in the hospital down at Temple University. And a friend from church, who also visits the strip club with me, we decided to go down to see him and take a prayer shawl. And he couldn't figure out why we would come, first of all. And then as we explained, you know, as you're covered with this prayer shawl, remember that we're praying for you and God's love is with you. And our prayers are covering you and keeping you warm and holding you before God. And he started to cry. I don't know why you would do this for me, but thank you. And now every time I see him, he says, I still cover up. When I'm cold, I cover up with that prayer shawl, and I remember you. We visited him a number of times while he was in the hospital, and at one point, things were very bad, and he wasn't sure he was going to make it. There was a procedure that had like a 1 in 50 chance of working for him, and we asked to pray with him, and Sandy prayed, and I prayed. And then he started praying. I've never heard this man pray out loud. He started praying, and he said something about, I don't know what God is doing, this crazy story that God is writing with you church ladies and me when I found you in my parking lot one day. I don't know what story he's writing, but I'm looking forward to the ending. Insiders and outsiders. Or maybe we're all just people. You guys work with words all day, every day, so I'm going to stop talking now. I invite you to take a few moments to think. Think about Ruth, about Naomi, about Boaz, about this crazy story that God is writing with insiders and outsiders and all kinds of people all over the world. And up on the table in the basket, I photocopied some doors because I want you to think about making space in your life for someone that you may consider an outsider. Take a card, write a name, write a couple of names, or don't write any name, and just wait on God to reveal who the outsiders are in your life and who you would like to begin being a Naomi to. Or being a Boaz too. And then we'll close with a song after a while. So I invite you to take a card.